Hello, everyone. Thank you for sticking around for the last panel today as part of the industry forum. My name is Victoria Sampson. I'm the Washington Office Director of the Secure Well Foundation. I'd like to thank you for sticking around for our session, Big Data, Big Space, Big Risk, Addressing Cybersecurity Threats. The point of this discussion is that satellites and rockets are becoming increasingly digital through the growing use of software and their platforms, so the spacecraft are flexible in use and can send performance analytics back to Earth. Meanwhile, observation satellites collect petabytes of data by observing Earth. While a main challenge of big data is being able to handle all the information and translate it into one understandable language, it also brings a risk to the space industry, which is what we'll be going over today. With the increased use of software and space in mind, this panel will be discussing the following questions. How can we make sure the data we use is safe and not tampered with? How can we avoid onboard software hacking? And what can the space industry learn from other industries that have a more advanced digital environment? First of all, this is a Slido-enabled discussion. If you've been here to some of the other sessions, you will know of what to do, but if not, it's an interactive tool allowing direct questions and voting on polls. So if you can, take your phone and go to Slido, S-L-I-D-O.com. The password is spacetech17. And we'll be doing a quick poll to get a sense of the interest and the, background of the audience in a sec. So if you have it up on your phones, you can see the following polls up there. Under active polls, it's the right-hand tab. It says, how important is security and protection for space applications? And we have several options. We have very important, we have neutral, we have not so important, and we have, hey, I thought it was already protected. So if anyone wants to vote on that, let us know a sense of the organization. All right. Okay, I feel like everyone who's going to vote has voted. All right, so mostly there is a overwhelming agreement that space and security protection for space applications is very important. Good. I guess you wouldn't be here if you didn't think it was important, so thanks for playing. I guess we'll close up voting now, and I'll go on to my presentation. Let's see if I'm going to drop it. Do you want to grab a seat? Daniel, would you like to grab a seat? Or? Before I get started, just so he's not hovering off stage, I'd like to invite Daniel Volstadt, IT Security Commissioner of the Bundesrat, to come up on stage. He'll be speaking in just a few minutes about IT security in his organization. So, cybersecurity risks to the space domain. Before I get started, I'd just like to give a brief background to my organization since I think it's probably new to many in this audience. The Secure World Foundation is a private operating foundation that promotes cooperative solutions for space sustainability. Our vision is a secure, sustainable, and peaceful use of outer space that contributes to global stability on Earth. We work with governments, industry, international organizations, and civil society to develop and promote ideas and actions for international collaboration that achieves a secure, sustainable, and peaceful use of outer space. So just kind of a background in discussing why cybersecurity is important to space sustainability and space stability. As more countries integrate space into their national capabilities and rely on space-based information for national security, there's an increased chance that any interference with satellites could spark or escalate a crisis or conflict. At the same time, the growing reliance on space for national security capabilities creates incentives for attacks on space capabilities as part of a conflict on Earth. The disruption or even the perception of a disruption or concerns about disruption of space capabilities can be very destabilizing. Stability relies on predictable, reliable access to space. The situation is further complicated by the increasing dependence on commercial and civil space systems supporting the global economy, and the challenge of determining the exact cause of a satellite malfunction, whether it was due to a space weather event, impact by space debris, unintentional interference, or deliberate aggression, or just sometimes things fall apart. Satellites and other space assets are vulnerable to cyber attack. Cyber vulnerabilities in space therefore pose serious risk for ground-based critical infrastructure, and insecurities in the space environment will hinder economic development and increase the risk to society. Resilience is key for continuity of national security mission. So this means cybersecurity has a strong role to play in this matter. Space capabilities therefore become an attractive target for counter-space operations. Generally speaking, counter-space efforts have been constrained mostly to non-kinetic options. That is to say, whenever people think about war or attacks on space capabilities, I think the visual people like to think of are satellites being exploded on orbit, the Star Wars mentality, when in reality, that's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is what's already happening. Non-kinetic options, electromagnetic interference, radio frequency interference, cyber attacks, that sort of thing. The fact that cyber and electronic warfare are seen as being more usable means it's a more attractive option for hostile actors. In fact, we see this happening now. And while this is in some ways encouraging in that it's not creating large amounts of debris on orbit that could potentially be there for decades, it is also a little unsettling, as there's no generally agreed upon law of armed conflict in space. Proportionality, what constitutes an armed attack, distinction between civil and military users, these are all unclear. McGill University is heading up a manual on international law applicable to military uses of space, or MILAMUS, but that is still in its initial stages, promises to be a huge undertaking that will take several years at least. Will take a while to proliferate and become the accepted norm of responsible space actors, if ever. In the meantime, we risk having technology get out ahead of the policies and laws that are governing it. So this is my first slide going over some of the threats. Cyber attacks on satellites can include things like jamming, spoofing, hacking attacks on communication networks, targeting control systems or mission packages, and attacks on ground infrastructure such as satellite control centers. The signals from global navigation satellites are very weak. They operate over a narrow range of frequencies. They're particularly vulnerable to jamming acts. We've already had discussions several points over the past couple days about what would happen if GPS was jammed, both to the global economy and to national security and international stability. The huge amount of data being disseminated through satellites makes it possible for criminals to corrupt accuracy and reliability with a low probability of discovery, i.e. spoofing. In particular, preventing spoofing requires integrity checks in which large amounts of data are transferred between interested parties. And we see this happening in the maritime arena, where space-based monitoring systems are regularly being jammed or spoofed by vessel operators entering false information in order to disguise their illicit activities. In principle, a lack of integrity and availability can create a great deal of damage to confidence in the systems. And we're seeing attacks on ground stations as well. They're probably most likely, to be honest, just because they're the easiest to get to. They're physically more accessible. They have a mixed degree of protection. And you also have humans going in and out of ground stations, so you have the man-in-the-loop possibility of interception. There are possible cyber threats against space-based systems include state-to-state and military actions, well-resourced, organized criminal elements seeking financial gain, terrorist groups, and individual hackers. We're already seeing interference with space assets. The U.S. National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration took its satellite data information system offline in September 2014 after an apparent hacking incident, which kept weather agencies around the world from receiving necessary forecasting information for 48 hours. In 2015, NASA reported nearly 1,500 cyber incidents, including hundreds of attacks executed from websites and web-based application, as well as the loss or theft of computing devices. And we're seeing it not just at governmental levels. Individual satellite companies are seeing an increase of intrusions into their computer networks. Intelsat saw a 60% increase in the number of denial of service attacks from 2015 to 2016. While these attacks were unsuccessful, they still signify a dramatic increase in the number of the attacks. A new entrance to space, which we've had a lot of discussion over the past couple days, there are a lot of benefits to that, but they do present numerous challenges. One of which is because there are more entrants to space, it means we have more entrants for possible hacks. It is also unclear that whether new entrants are aware of best practices or responsible behavior. On the bright side, the new entrants are creating satellites using current technology, so it's possible they're more aware of cybersecurity than some of the decades-old legacy satellites that are built using older technology. We're seeing an increasing blurring of lines between different types of satellites and missions, which means it's getting harder to wall off national security communications. For example, 80% of the U.S. military's communications are carried over commercial satellites. We're also seeing an attempt to increase resiliency, a number of military-hosted payloads and commercial satellites. And so there's kind of a push and pull where the military wants the commercial entities to have stronger, resilient cybersecurity systems, whereas the commercial entities don't necessarily want to pay to harden their sites as much as needed until they actually show that there's going to be a benefit to them on a financial level. And this is probably pretty obvious, but a lot of satellites are old. In a way, that's a good thing. They were built really well. They've lasted longer than the lifespans. They're a good return on investment for satellite companies, for people who are getting satellite broadcasting, for people who depend upon the information coming from these satellites. On the other hand, this means that these satellites were conceived 10, 15, 20, even 30 or 40 years ago, based on when they were initially built. They were not overly concerned with cyber threats because it was believed that the space segment of on-orbit systems and services was sufficiently isolated from the ground segment. So the good news is that a lot of the more modern platforms have a high degree of security engineered into them. The bad news is, of course, they're interacting with a lot of legacy satellites, older satellites, they do not. And you have a couple challenges, particularly, again, from looking at it from military standpoints. The U.S. Air Force Space and Missile Systems Center, for example, uses an extensive array of ground systems that are sometimes decades old to communicate with individual satellites. And it's so old, it's got so many moving parts, it's hard to even know if and when an attack has been attempted. We're seeing increased use of commercial off-the-shelf systems, COTS, which is beneficial because it's increased, the flexibility and improved commercial satellites in terms of what they can provide, and it's made things a lot cheaper over the long run. But again, when you have an increased level of entry, that means there's different ways in which hackers or entrants could get into the system. For example, commercial software updates. These updates happen for a few reasons. One is which to add new features. The other is to patch to mitigate the threat of exploits when discovered. So there's two cybersecurity concerns here. First, the vulnerabilities are significantly easier to discover when the software is freely available. And secondly, a mechanism needs to be placed to regularly install and test security patches. As anyone who's had a computer, you know you're always getting software updates. Imagine satellite operators trying to keep up with that. And then finally, Internet of Things. I know it's a hot discussion. There's a lot of potential there. But it presents enormous challenges for people who offer satellite communications products and services because each connected device offers hackers a point of entry into the network and a way to target other elements of the network. So I've discussed a little bit of the threats. I'll talk a little bit of ways in which you can try and mitigate the threats. And if there's one thing to take away from this discussion, it's this. There's no way to keep them out. It's going to happen. You will have interlopers in there. So the question is, how do you manage the risk? Every organization must assume you're either already infiltrated or you soon will be. And so when you're looking at managing risk, you have to assess cybersecurity on the basis of cost effectiveness and proportionality, looking at benefits weighed against cost and penalties, and trying to prioritize benefits in terms of procurement systems putting in place. You try and build in adaptability and agility so that as the cybersecurity threats change, your priorities can change along with them. And finally, you need to start thinking, well, we're not going to keep away from all of our data. So what data is the most valuable and how do we protect that? It's important to share information about interference or attempts or attacks. Oftentimes, companies, for business reasons, don't want to let anyone know that there's been an interference with their information. And I understand why there's a business case for that. But in terms of making sure people are aware of the general threat, it limits in terms of people's the general space community's awareness of how, I guess, pervasive the issue is. For example, financial service organizations have a high level of collaboration. They share the responses in cyberspace because for them, cyber is competitive. They don't know who's going to be hit next. And in terms of the space sector, it'd be a good idea for organizations to start sharing information on satellite attacks in order to raise the level of awareness of the problem. And then we need to make cybersecurity awareness and deliberate actions to mitigate it the norm of it being a responsible space actor for satellite and other space-related companies. You need to demonstrate good cybersecurity as part of being a responsible actor. perhaps being it could be part of demonstrating limited liability for insurance purposes. In terms of thinking that certification, that could be said a company is following cybersecurity best practices. Satellite communication firms are also taking a close look at the security procedures employed by their partners and customers, because again, any weak link can compromise the whole network. And I think satellite companies are just going to start spending money building in information security as part of their overall budgeting process. Oftentimes, space situation awareness is overlooked, but it's important to increase space situation awareness so you're aware of what's happening on orbit. It can help deter attacks, identify sources of anomaly and malfunctions. If you can understand the patterns, you can understand when those patterns have been disrupted and lets you know that there has been some sort of interference either attempted or that was successful. And then it's important to strengthen the supply chain of satellite components, because right now there's a lot of uncertainties about where they come from, what levels of protection are part of the overall supply chain. And in terms of mitigation, there's also an international approach that needs to be taken. It can't just be done at the individual, national, organizational level. It needs to be a multilateral level. International cooperation will be crucial in order to develop a multilateral space and cybersecurity regime. But you have to make sure it's not too highly regulated, because otherwise it'll be too slow to enable an effective response to cybersecurity. So a lightly regulated approach using industry-led best practices that include collaboration of all known actors and stakeholders is important. This will better promote agility and an effective threat response. And then in terms of our discussions at International Fora, I realize I'm speaking to a very industry-based audience, and I know the predilection is kind of roll your eyes like, oh God, the United Nations again. But I mean, the thing is, according to Article 6 of the Outer Space Treaty, your national governments are legally liable. They have to provide supervising authority for any activities happening within their territory or by their citizens. So these international discussions directly affect your ability to utilize space, and they directly affect your ability to get financially benefits and to build economy on it. So I think it's important just to be aware these international discussions are being held, because they will affect how you will function as an economy. So just a quick overview very quickly of a couple of the discussions international fora. The United Nations, they have an organization called the Committee on Peaceful Uses of Outer Space. It focuses on civil space actions. They have an effort called the Long-Term Sustainability Guidelines, where they're having basically all the members of COPUS, which is about 84 countries, their consensus-built practices, where they get together and agree on best practices for space. They have a couple discussions on cybersecurity, specifically looking at implementing policy precluding interference with the operation of foreign space objects, ensuring the security and safety of terrestrial infrastructure that support the operation of orbital systems. There's a thing called the Group of Governmental Experts, which is basically a UN group. You have 15 countries that are supposed to be regionally, geographically different, and include the main stakeholders of an issue. They get together, they provide a consensus-driven document to present to the Secretary General of the United Nations. So it's, again, it can be very helpful, it can be very blah, it can be nothing at all. But they've had a couple GGEs recently on things that would be affecting space and cybersecurity. The first one is a Group of Governmental Experts report on transparency and confidence-building measures in outer space activities. They gave a report to the UN Secretary General in 2013, which had some cybersecurity implications. They recommended promoting the exchange of information and having consultative mechanisms, including preventing or minimizing potential risks of physical damage or harmful interference in space assets. And then even more specifically, we had the Group of Governmental Experts, well, you can see GGE Cyber, which was held in 2014-2015, again, gave a report talking about how common understanding international law applies to the state use of information communication technology. It recommended increased cooperation at the regional and multilateral levels, recommended identification of mechanisms for the participation of the private sector, academia, and civil society organizations, which is important. You need to make sure you have all stakeholders involved in the discussion. It can't just be done at the nation-state level. It can't just be done at the industry level. It has to be done across all the different levels of stakeholders. And then finally, recommending a dialogue and security and common understandings and the application of international law and norms, rules, and principles for responsible behavior. Chatham House, a UK-based NGO, put out an excellent report in September of last year, which I recommend anyone read if you'd like to get a really good overview of the issue. It's called Space, the Final Frontier for Cybersecurity. And they had a lot of interesting points in there. At the end, they had a list of recommendations for increasing cybersecurity for space, and I won't go through all of them there. There are a few up on the slide, but they talk about things like raising awareness of stakeholders so they're aware that there is importance of cybersecurity and it does affect their ability to utilize space, encouraging vigilance of actors of possible intrusions or even the possibility of intrusions, making sure space sector people are aware of vulnerabilities, trying to build in resilience, having regulatory requirements at the national and multilateral level, and then finally establishing good practices so that you can have good and good enough practices in order to ensure that the space environment is not interfered with by cyber security threats. And I'll just be wrapping up really quickly. In terms of talking about responsible behavior and things that can ensure the space domain is stable over the long term, my organization put together a handbook for new actors in space, which my boss would be very upset with me if I did not discuss at this point. So I'll just really quickly go over it for you guys. Our goal was to create a publication that would provide an overview of the fundamental principles, laws, norms, and best practices for a safe, predictable, responsible activities in space. There is a small cyber element to some of the discussions. When we created this document, we had two specific audiences. The first was we wanted to deal with nation states developing space programs for the first time, whether they're getting their first satellite, they're getting broadcasting from someone else's satellite, and how they can best utilize that space information. And the other idea is we're trying to look at universities and startup companies that are developing and operating satellites. So the idea we're trying to say, okay, what are the regular norms that are required from the space actors? This handbook is not meant to be exhaustive. It's just meant to be a broad overview. It's about 150 pages. We have three chapters. The first chapter is the International Framework for Space Activities. You know, it goes over, there's a thing known as the Outer Space Treaty. You might want to be aware of that. There's a thing known as Liability Convention. You might want to be aware of that. Talking about what standards are for export control, for remote sensing, things of that nature. Our second chapter talks about National Space Policy Administration. You know, if you're going to be broadcasting, someone needs to regulate that. Someone needs to do spectrum allocation, that sort of thing. Someone needs to make sure if there's cybersecurity interests that they're actually being followed. And then chapter three looks at responsible space operations from birth to death, so to speak, pre-launch, during on-orbit operations, end of life sort of thing. It was officially released in February 2017, so earlier this year. Electronic copies are available on our website at the URL you see. You can also find it through our homepage. If you really would like to buy it, we have copies available on Amazon. And yeah, so I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. I look forward to your questions at the end. Thank you. Okay. And next, we will have our other speaker, our final speaker of the day, Daniel Volstadt, IST Security Commissioner of the Bundesrat.
Hello. Welcome here, impressive, and thank you to join. I'm sorry for my little cold, but I try my best. I'm the Chief Information Security Officer of Bundesrat. It's a German constitution body. And I give you a little insight in IT security issues, what attackers do, what scientists do, and so on. Hope it will be interesting for you. Let us start with the jungle of IT security. Yes, if you have the task to make the IT security work in your company, how would I start? I would go to the IT department and say, IT guys, please some ideas, how can I enhance IT security? And they will they will offer a list of ideas. Then I go to product department and say, okay, I will enhance IT security within products. Have you ideas? And your department is going to have some valuable ideas on it. Next, you go to your building security, and your building people will say, "Oh, put 2-3 cameras there, double fences, and so on." And you've done pretty good job in security. After 2 years projecting, but unfortunately, things doesn't work this way. This presentation, I'd like to state why this doesn't work that way. On every, you can buy magazines with checklists, and you can work on this checklist, and you never know, is it an attack threatening you tomorrow? You don't know it. You have worked so hard, yes? So, how to quantify risks and how to build up an invaluable information security management system? I hope this presentation is going to help you a bit. Of course, you have to do everything at the same time. But I can tell you the most neglected thing are to care about the users. The attacker is always going the cheapest way, and the attacker is always trying to bypass all your security measures. So, have you said to your users and your workers that they take care what they put out on social media about themselves, about the company? Because that's the first thing an attacker will look for, to gain information for his attack. Another important thing is buildings. Are you sure your building automation system isn't connected to the internet? Who did check that for you? And then the things you care about, product security, and how did you check IT security at your suppliers? This whole bunch of things you have to care about, and at the end you've got some valuable IT security. Yes? But what are difficulties and problems about that? At first, some sentences about Bundesrat. Yes? Some of five federal institutions of Germany. It's an interface between states and the Federal Republic. 200 workers do their job. They're also IT, and me as IT security officer. And now, the important question, what attackers do? And don't forget, attackers do one thing. They try to bypass all your security measures. Yes? Who of you did hear about the recent VPA2 attack last days in the media? Another VPA2 attack? And the next attack, I can assure you, is coming 2 months ahead from now. But how can that be? Computer scientists told us VPA2 is secure. It takes 500,000 years to hack this. Now it is hacked. It's a miracle. I can tell you how does that come. No. That's because every hacker is also following his indifference curve. That means every hacker have a bunch of tools and he have holes. And then he looks for a point of the attack. Can he attack a hole with his tools? And your mistake, or it's a you as a defender, are going to the psychological trap, because you think you build up some cryptographic defenses and so on, some passwords, some fancy databases and so on. Remember the sentence, the attacker has one and only aim to bypass all this. Pardon? To bypass all this. And that is how we can see he can use chocolate. Yes? He can bypass all this you have installed by the very cheapest way and a way you never imagine. You never can imagine. He can, here is a survey, a recent survey by scientists, and they try to find out passwords. And here their outcome is that they got 50% of passwords if they give if they give chocolate before they ask for the passwords. Because as a human being, if you are given something, a stick or a mouse or a present or something, you want to give something back to this. And all of this, the attacker do know it. That's why telephone calls and spams and so on are so successful. Yes? So, what does this mean for space industry? Yes? Now you can say, oh, there are lots of IT security companies out there, so why, I don't know what this Mr. Folstedt said, so I call an IT security company and they manage IT security in my company. Problem solved. Oh? They come and make ID security, yes? If you think, then ID security, what do ID security want to secure, actually? Your data, your products, yes? But have you defined your assets? Have you defined? Always when you are going to attain those IT security presentations, the IT security guy in front of you will someone make a sentence like, ah, we all know there is no 100% security. We all know that. That's not true. That's not true. There is 100% security, but I have a question for you. When have you defined security and IT security in your company? When management come together and say, what are the assets of our company? What is IT security in our company? You cannot, of course, it is impossible to define IT security when you have never stated the asset. I give you an example concerning the space industry. I thought about it before coming here. You can think about some fancy algorithms in space which cyber secure your devices on Mars, perhaps. But who is going to attack them on Mars? they are rather attacked in a building you warehouse them in. So you have to think more about building security than some fancy cybersecurity on your protocols. Perhaps. So the key is a working ID security organization in your company. In where I work, hundreds, like on the federal level of Germany, 100 IT security officers exchange information with one another. At state level, there are another 100, and at town level, there are another 100. That means 300 IT security officers exchange information on recent attack. And I can state to you, Federal Republic of Germany is massively attacked every day. So it is absolute. So necessary to build up an information security management system. But at the beginning, I state, who can say whether your company is secure or not? The key, another key point is I can work on the IT security of my office, but I never can state now it's secure. If I want information about the security of my office, I have to ask them. So you are never able to state, is my company secure or not? You have to build you have to build your IT security on a certification foundry, and you have to call someone to check IT security. So I always have to call Federal Office of Information Security. They penetrate and check whether I have worked good or not. There's no other way. That is the reason why it doesn't work. You can't make your operating IT people make your ID security. Because, or you can, but it always have to be checked external by an external company or source. So, part check is part of the IT security management system circle. And you never ended. You ever had to adapt to actual attacks, and you have to adapt and adapt. Yes. Another major issue is complexity is the biggest friend of the attacker. Yes, every chip and every device you buy something else and build in have dozens and dozens of attack holes and possibilities. So, have you ever thought about how much it costs to reduce complexity on your devices and organization to reduce attack possibilities? I try to do my best at my side of job, and I hope I generated some further questions by your side. I work some 20 years on the field, and I appreciate you come today. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, may I remind you, if you guys can hear me, please send your questions in to Slido. If you have any questions for me or Daniel, or just issues, comments you want to make on the issue area,
The first one that we've been given is, can you give examples of recent cyber attacks on satellites or possibly even manned spacecraft? As far as I know, the space station has not been hacked, which is probably a good thing. But, I mean, this happens all the time. I know SES had issues for years with the Iranians, allegedly, jamming their satellites, part of the BBC coming into the region. I mean, part of the problem we run into is that the international regime doesn't really know how to handle, from a legal standpoint, things like jamming and deliberate interference. You have the International Telecommunications Union, or the ITU, which is an international organization established in Geneva, and it's a place where countries go and they have spectrum allocation discussions. They decide who gets orbital slots in geostationary orbit. And in theory, you can go to the ITU and say, hey, my satellite's being jammed. Can you do something about it? Right now, the ITU, and this is done deliberately, doesn't have a lot of teeth. Its strongest, response is a name and shame, and that it will name the possible attacker and say, look, we've triangulated the attack. It's coming from your territory. Can you do something to stop it? But, I mean, the fact of the matter is the country in question could be like, we have no idea what you're talking about. We don't see any jamming coming from the area. Stop what? And so it's kind of difficult to really respond appropriately. And again, that's done deliberately. No one's arguing the ITU needs more power. But the fact of the matter is the international regime doesn't really know how to handle these sort of jamming capabilities. I mentioned Intelsat had denial of service attacks last year. I mean, it happens all the time. And again, one of the problems we have as well is that oftentimes satellites are interfered with, and you have satellite broadcasting not getting through to its receiver. The question is it deliberate? Is someone deliberately trying to do that? Most radio frequency interference is not deliberate. It's just unintentional. Someone set up the equipment poorly. You have the person using it isn't doing it properly. There is something, a mistake in the region. And so the concern you have is, how do I know if this interference is deliberate or not? A lot of times you don't. I mean, unless you can actually find out if you shift your broadcast around and it follows your broadcast along the spectrum, then yeah, you can probably figure it's deliberate jamming. But it's a challenge. It's not always easy, and it's not really black and white. But we do know this sort of thing is happening. Sorry. In terms of other things, so what do you think, Daniel, for best practices? What can countries do if they had to do one thing to improve their IT security, or organizations to improve their IT security?
Certification is vital for the field, because in a certification scheme, everything is covered. Building security, supplier security, social engineering. It is vital that you put your IT security under a national framework, which is, in Germany, it's the IT Grundschutz. In Britain, it's a ISO 27001, and it's a good start.
Mm-hmm. And I think probably the added issue you have is that a lot of countries don't have national certification. And so the question is, where can countries go to get the kind of international certification? And that's where these international discussions can be very helpful. And I think you bring up a good point in terms of certification. It's really the users that are a big, I think, entry point in terms of security of the domain, correct?
Attacker love that users don't know so much. So you won't, I as an expert in the field, watch recent attacks on managers, on management level, on users. Most of the time we now watch, they try to steal vast amounts of money, but also data. We have other examples. Where they dress like blue, come to your open door. Do you want to know another example? They go to an exhibition and put a bunch with USB sticks with your logo on your where you do have your exhibition. And they say, did you put them there? Oh no, did you put? Yes, they come on ideas you never get through, and the ideas are very cost effective to break in companies, to break and to blackmail perhaps someone.
Right. I mean, I think the problem is we like to look at technical fixes. You know, oh, if only the technology gets better, we can improve our security. There's been a lot of discussion about China's quantum communication satellite, which is unhackable. I mean, and I'm not trying to downplay the importance of that. I think it's a tremendous increase in terms of satellite communication security. But I really feel you cannot depend upon the technology of getting ahead of the issue. You need to look at how, you know, on an individual and an organizational level, you can improve your overall security to ensure that you don't have cyber attacks in your space domain or space capabilities.
Think, always think of the bypass. The attacker won't concentrate on the quantum algorithm. He knows he cannot hack the quantum algorithm. So he tries to listen to the power supplies. Perhaps he can very easily get the key of listen to power supplies to bypass this hard algorithms. It's easier, and that's a point. That's a maximization of utility of the attacker. They have one aim, to bypass your security measure. It's easier than you think. Think of a piece of chocolate. You never would think phone calls in your company, someone would tell passwords or ways in. Which door is open today? Would you think someone would have success? They have success.
Do you have anything else you wanted to add or any final thoughts?
No, perhaps someone out of the audience do have some further question? Yes,
yeah.
Please.
Come. Can I go to the mic?
Yeah.
It's working. Yeah. Thanks very much. So, well, I am a young researcher in the space field, and with one sentence in your presentation, it was a bit disappointing for me that you were telling that any new entrant to the space is a new threat. And my question is that with all of the IT security and all of the policies that you had so far in the other industries that we have, already you were successful or not, and if you don't have any tangible example for a space, what you want to put more complexity to the space? Because we have already so many technical complexity to reach there and get rid of the mess that we have here. I don't know why the scope of this word security for the space business is becoming so important. And if you have any sample that any communication satellite, commercial satellite, deep research a space satellite has been cyber attacked or not. And if you don't have, then looking for a solution at this top level that would put so many resistance to other development, I think is nonsense. Sorry.
I understand. I'm not trying to make anyone's job harder, but I actually did give examples of times in which you had radio frequency interference, you have spoofing, you have interference with actual broadcasting. It happens all the time. And the concern is that we want your broadcasting, the information coming from space, to be dependable, to be reliable, to be usable. I mean, that's part of the model, right? Is that the information is what it's supposed to be, and that's going to be there in a reliable, predictable manner. And so the idea is not to increase the complexity, but make sure this is something that's being included when people are working on space capabilities and space domain.
But do you have any example of any space mission from the past half a century that it's that in its mission objective, they could not achieve that mission objective, scientific, communication, surveillance, military, or whatever, due to cyber attack? Do you have 10 examples from thousands of mission, space missions so far?
I feel like you're not hearing me, and maybe we could take this offline, because I gave several examples already, both now and in my presentation. So maybe you and I could talk later.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Did you want to? Okay, so I think just because it is getting late and it is in the end of the day, I'd like to, first of all, thank you all for attending and thank my colleague for an interesting discussion and thank the organizers for inviting us. Thank you very much.